and solve, help us solve the issues that belong to things that it seems to me you never went through. I, for example, was not spiritually generous when I started Gyan. My journey had brought me to a point maybe of too much fear or too much insecurity, I don't know. But what was an ideal for me was not so much in practical form, not so easily visible in a practical form. So I didn't even know when I started my studies in Gyan that my problem was what's called a non-generous heart or further, actually, you're quite right, a very critical attitude. It took me years before I saw that I was operating under a mind that was constantly commenting, criticizing, and correcting. So I would like to hear you talk about that energy, just so that we can all, you know, do an honest checking.
But what often happens, a critical nature is linked to this abstract sense of perfectionism. No, and that perfectionism also creates controlling nature. You know, there's a person thinks they know how to do something best. They will make a very honest effort. They'll work very hard for it. But they never sometimes click that actually their definition of perfection is totally relative. And so they feel they're responsible for something to work or to go well. But in that mania for perfectionism or something to go right, that sense of responsibility pushes them into being very controlling. And one of the aspects of controlling is being critical. This is not quite right. This is not quite good. Rather than emphasizing what is right, again, from the heart, not from just a duty, oh, this is very good, fine, but really from the heart, emphasizing what is very good, they block themselves, and certainly they block others' cooperation. You know, it's like in a teacher in a school. If a teacher doesn't really recognize and appreciate and verbally encourages the good thing that a child does, then the child cannot progress. And it's the same for us, with each other and with ourselves. And sometimes being too task-oriented can create this very hardness. It's like a hardness or a harshness in the soul. And then they can do it with themselves. What is more important, the task or how the task gets done? Which of the two? Do you aim for 100% perfectionism in the completed task? Or let's aim for, at the moment, for 65 or 70% and let's respect people's feelings.
So the 65% is because there's an acknowledgement that it's all about relationships?
Yes, it's relationship. You don't let go of the task, but you know, when people feel honestly and, you know, respected and accepted, they put their best forth. Because if they don't feel that, because sometimes people feel they're being used. But sometimes they don't feel it's Baba's task, they feel it's your task. and then they won't put their best forward. That's why I've got to really be an instrument. There's a very beautiful word that is used very often. It's even in Lockick they use it. And that's facilitate. I don't create something, I facilitate it to happen. But then you see, for that energy to be released, the person who is facilitates has to feel complete. Now, if there's not the feeling of completeness in the self, then there's too many needs that interfere. Now, the need to lead, the need to serve, the need to be appreciated, the need, many, many, many needs. And they can really block the heart a lot, and they certainly will block the atmosphere.
Kind of going back to what we were looking at before, if this is the honest part of someone's journey, and they're in the center, how do you work with that so that we can move into this new responsibility that Baba's talking about a lot, creating this pure atmosphere? Actually, the question I want to ask here is, at what point is my accommodating, my tolerating, my bowing to some of these imbalanced behaviors, at what point does that cross a line and it's actually sustaining their weakness and not helping the atmosphere?
Yeah. One thing that this soul has learned is always look at oneself. Is my relationship with Baba balanced? Am I coherent inside me? Is what I think, what I say, what I do coherent? Or is it sometimes distracted? And you know, mercy, compassion for others plays a big role. Understanding of where others are at. See, it's one thing to understand where others are at, and there's another thing where you want them to be at. They're not ready. But if they, sometimes we've been doing teamwork and with different places, and yes, the service unblocks, things get done, but the relationships may not improve. And what I notice is that when relationships do improve in a group, it's that one soul, that's all it takes, has shifted their consciousness. And that has a big impact. Because it's not a matter of just a technique. Like, you know, if one soul really, from the heart, wants to accept, wishes to really understand, creates a tuning in, has a real empathy, you find it affects everything. And then that affects all the others. So I can't say because five people are like this, or two people are like this, or these people are like that, myself, I'm independent. My connection with Baba, to make attention on this, and that attention on the self with Baba certainly creates that atmosphere which facilitates many things very naturally. And plus, you know, if I start to have really good feelings, then I can find methods to be clear to others without hurting them. Because sometimes we're a little fed up. And when we get a little, even if it's a little fed up, it's much better than before. Before I could be 100% fed up. Now maybe it's only 20%. But still it's there. And that's what they may catch, especially Brahmins, because they catch everything, you know. So that is what they will catch. And that I may think I'm speaking tolerantly, I may say, but the task has to get done. You know, I may put all these things, but the way I behave is the key. It's not the task is my behavior, isn't it? Because what do people come to see? They come to see love, they come to feel peace. Now, if my behavior is not reflecting these things, then what am I talking about task? Just to get the course done? Just to get the program done? You know, when people see a program, you know, if they're ever able to get behind the scenes, and if they, you know, they can see sometimes it's done very peacefully, very respectfully, sometimes it's like, you know, chickens without heads running around. You know, they're not going to be that attracted. The farm boy, yes. See, how I get it done, how I speak to somebody when there is a very tense situation, it's true, something has to be done on time, but how I speak to that person at that time, others see this too, you know. Because then what's the difference between myself and a lochic if I also get nervous and then I speak like that? These little things are very important. The day-to-day good manners, the day-to-day caring, this avoids a lot of difficulties and situations further down the line that then you have to make a lot of effort to fix.
Two questions just came into my mind at once and collided. I don't remember either of them all of a sudden. You were saying that the purity the purity inside good feelings, pure feelings, good wishes, is very, very powerful. Even if one person has this shift in consciousness, the impact is huge. So getting back to our theme, which is creating the pure atmosphere, what is the impact of this effort to continue to look at my own self, my relationship with Baba, that it's coherent, and that I'm actually able to come into genuine, authentic good wishes and pure feelings?
See, it's very simple. The impact is that Baba is present. And sometimes we forget to make Baba present. You know, we create a team, we have 5 members. What about the 6th member? Now, is Baba there? Because after all, he's the real coordinator of that. I mean, is my consciousness that subtle? Things are not really that hard. It's just that habits come in and block the subtle. And when the subtle is blocked, then the things that are obvious are not done. The things that are obvious are not thought about. The things that even we give classes on to others, we forget.
I could write a book on that. Now, also connected to what you were just saying a minute ago, that it's the day-to-day good manners which build something so essential for the creation of a genuinely pure atmosphere. It seems like what you're saying is that in that case, service, for example, which often would have us running around like chickens without their head. This is an English expression. I don't know if it works in other languages. It's like crazy. You know, you just forget all the principles and the tenets of gyan and yoga, and you're just, you know, crazy. So in that sense, service is really like a good mirror for us, a good test paper. If it's in moments of pressure and tension, to be seeing what my behavior is like. If I'm not at that point reverting to very loud voice, very bossy behaviors, controlling.
Because what is service? What does it mean? I mean, you don't do service, you are service. And Baba, in the message she gave yesterday through Daddy Gulzar, he was talking about the sorrow of souls. You see, he said, the sorrow of souls is increasing. You have to emerge your angelic form. And, you know, you can't be emerging an angelic form at the same time, you know, getting stressed and and raising your voice. And maybe you don't raise your voice, but you boil inside because of somebody's incompetence or what you think is incompetence or lack of respect and things like this. You know, where's the angelic image? It reverted back to the human. So it's good to look at, you know, what do we mean by service? Yes, for souls all to get the message. What message? How will the message spread quickly when they see, when they feel? It's not just the words, but with the words it will spread, but when there's also that purity, that state of being along with those words, then the souls are touched much more deeply. And so karma yoga, Baba often speaks of karma yoga, kavan, karavan, hara, be the observer of the service that is being done through me, through this soul. But again, you see, again, if a soul has a very deep need inside to be valued, sometimes they grab on service very much. And then there's lots of conflict with others and lots of competition. But the real problem is the need of to be valued, and they've transferred it to service. Baba has said, service will happen. It's in God's hands. It's what's in your hands is your stage. And, you know, Daddy was speaking to a group of brothers, and she said one really very deep thing. She said, service is waiting for your stage. Actually, it's done. It's there. It's just waiting for your stage. And I remember once this person came to Baba and said, oh Baba, you know, we met the president and we did this and did this. And Baba said, yeah, why not? It's godly service. These connections will be made. These things will happen. It's a game. Daddy often says, you know, service, it's a game. But even in a game there are rules that you have to follow. Because though it's a game, the rules have to be followed properly. And really the number one rule is that first, my priority is my soul consciousness, this very deeply, very deep in it. Why Daddy and Baba speak of Om Shanti so much? Because if I go deep, deep, deep into this awareness and consciousness, that I will feel a great completeness of being. Very deep completeness of being. And then the relationship with God. And that becomes the basis of all the things.
What are the next two rules?
Well, if I do that one, all the others will work.
So there's really only one rule.
Yes. I mean, I'm sure there are others, but you know, what happens if the main thing is followed, all the other things will fall into place. You know, I don't need to know 15 of them or 20 of them. You know, the first one, it makes the soul the observer, for example. You know, be a detached observer, but if I'm really the companion of the one who is doing, and I don't have that need to be the doer and to be appreciated as the doer, all the things will start to follow. And what happens is that you get actually a lot of activity. A lot of activity will come. But you won't feel lost in it, you know, but it will come. You see, the daddies are very active. But the more detached one is from that, the more it comes. Because why? It keeps the purity. There's not the selfish motive. See, when a person has a selfish motive, either they grab on service or they don't do any. Not doing any is also a selfish motive. Yeah, there's a selfishness in it. When the soul is pure, things just flow. Many things will happen. But there's not this feeling of, I am the doer. It's more, I am the observer.
Can you talk a little bit more about a selfish motive in service?
Well, you know, selfish motives, I'm trying, anything that is selfish, like any of the vices, is I want something. I'm trying to get something, to feel, to fill in some hole inside. Whether it is respect, appreciation, value. And this is where there's a gap in my consciousness, then the mine and the I and the my is much bigger. The more complete I really am in my own inner consciousness of, for example, this I am a soul, deep, very deep in that, the soul is full. And a sign of being full is generosity. The soul is always available, the soul is always there, they never get tired, they don't get disheartened so easily. They don't get disheartened so easily. Or if they, maybe if a little something comes, they can bounce back quickly. You know, things come, but they can bounce back. Whereas if there's a selfish motive, then the soul will not. I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to talk to that one, or I'm not going, this is too tiring doing all of this. Selfish motives drain the soul because they create a lot of waste thoughts. Waste thoughts, Baba has said, you know, really this is our main aim now, cut out waste thoughts, because that certainly blocks the purity of the atmosphere.
I don't know about you, but I feel like I've somehow mounted a fast train, and we're going very fast through some really deep things. Does anybody have that feeling? That these are really deep things, and we're going really fast. This usually happens when I talk with Anthony, because he lives there. You know, we're still just like learning about that place and visiting
too.
That place.
I'm learning also.
But sometimes I have the feeling you're living there. Anyway, should we take a few minutes
questions
we can get to, but maybe just take a few minutes just to be quiet and see where all of this sits in ourselves. Is that okay? No? Now, if anyone has questions, if you could just be writing it down and getting it up to me somehow. But otherwise, just to continue, it seems, Anthony, that according to everything that's been set up to now, there isn't anything to do to specifically create a pure atmosphere. A pure atmosphere is the result of all the other things that we're specifically putting our attention on. Is that correct?
Generally, yes.
So what would be some of the things that we would really be doing directly to create the pure atmosphere?
For example, when we cook food on a daily basis and offer it to Baba, that also helps in the atmosphere. Keeping the place clean, Baba's place clean, that also helps in the atmosphere. Things being tidy and ordered, that also helps in the atmosphere too. I mean, physically also it's important that, you know, there's a cleanliness. An offering, you know, the offering of the food every day, it's this idea of offering. Is a very important. Okay, it is food for it to be cleaned and filled with Baba's vibrations, but it reminds us that the confluence age is the age of offering. We're offering our life. And why are we offering our life? It's so that it is made purer and purer, and then Baba can offer it for the service of his other children. It's bhakti. They call this, when somebody dedicates themselves to the service, in service of God, they call it the consecrated life.
What's another word for consecrated?
Consecrated means very holy, very sacred. And this is a great honor. I always think this is this is the time. At the confluence, Baba spoke about it the other day, it's no longer Iron Age, it's confluence age, it's the age of ascending. Never think of descent, even no matter what Maya comes or what happened, it's the age of ascending. And to ascend, the soul is letting go of things. Letting go of things. And in that letting go, you know, offering them also to Baba so Baba can dissolve them. And sometimes there's something we forget to do.
What do we forget?
A particular habit, a particular weakness. Either we project it onto other people and they're to blame. Or I hold on to it and fight with it and battle with it.
You mean trying to get rid of it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And call it effort. That's... this is not effort. Actually, the effort is two things. Recognizing it very honestly and then surrendering it, offering it to Baba.
What do you mean by offering it to Baba? Can you talk to us about how you do that?
Well, you know, I say deep inside there is the decision, I don't want this in my consciousness anymore. Because it has to be a deep decision. Because sometimes with certain habits, we justify them. Because our personality has taken identity from it, pleasure from it. So, and this is why we will blame others for something. Whereas actually, if I truly recognize it and I truly decide, I don't want this anymore, whether it's personality characteristic, consciousness, whatever it is, then I, because by myself I not, may not be able to get rid of it. But I do have to recognize and I do have to decide. That's got to be my decision. It's not Baba's decision. Baba can't decide. I have to decide. All he can do is that when I give it as that I don't want it anymore, then he can do his work of cleansing it out and dissolving. And of course I have to understand that I may have to do this quite a number of times with the same habit, because it's become too much of personality to get rid of it just like that.
This is actually something I wanted to ask you. Sometimes, I mean, this is a very beautiful formula for giving it to Baba, I feel, and one that we can really grasp and start doing. One thing I've noticed about Madhuban is that there will be some of these personality traits that we really would have worked with, and we would have thought we'd let them go, we'd offered them. There would have been tests in which we passed, and we would have really felt that any sorrow and any habit connected to that personality trait has been cleaned out. But when we come to Madhuban, either a test comes and we fail it because of that personality trait, or there's no test, but the sorrow of that thing emerges. And it's Madhuban that's done that. Does that make sense? Has that ever happened to anyone? Hands? I'm not the only one? Oh, good. I'm not the only one. So, Madhuban is a very pure atmosphere. What's going on there?
Well, because it's a pure atmosphere, the impure comes out. It's quite logical. Washing machine time, and the detergent has to be put in. But again, sometimes we think we have offered, but there's not been really that deep. You see, it's sometimes very important to understand the roots quite well. And sometimes I blindly offer. Because I'm afraid I'll be judged. I want to keep a good image. Yes, I understand bits of it, and no, it's no good, it's terrible. So I blindly offer. When I blindly offer, I haven't got at the root of it. And you have to be realistic, because you know, it's centuries of sanskaras. Centuries. It's not just one life. Because when the soul really trusts Baba and there's that surrender with all the heart, you know, one does that, decides very deeply, but you also are realistic to know some roots don't go away that easily. And you can tell, because I don't know if it's only Madhuban, I think also certain situations, even outside, suddenly trigger something off. Actually, if it happens in Madhuban, it can be, you know, you have the seniors, you have Baba, things can be even, you know, it can be cleared up. Can be. But I think anything that is still sitting inside, anything can trigger it off. And sometimes, quite illogically, sometimes it doesn't, you know, when something just happens, there seems to be no logic for it. But certainly the thing is that I haven't gone deep enough to understand it and to offer it. And also, this may sound a bit strange, but I need to also accept it. Because, you know, if I always, you know, yes, it's the bad me, you know, it's, you know, it breaks the image. You know, it's good to accept it. This is something that has come into this soul, okay? And usually you will find, and often Baba has put this, for example, that something that has become a tamopradhan now was once satopradhan. Certain things, okay, not all of them, but like attachment. He'll say actually in its pure, pure, pure form, it was love. It just degraded. So it's good to go, this is why it's the most effective way to create that pure atmosphere inside, go back to the original root. Always to go back to the original root, because in that original root, that original sanskar will always release its energy, no matter how big the other pollution is. And sometimes the mistake we make in making the wrong type of effort is I get caught in the wheel of self-effort. There are some souls who don't make effort at all, think it's okay, everybody else is to blame. And there are the other souls who, you know, they don't stop flagellating themselves, you know? They don't stop hitting themselves. Usually, the Brahman tends to do a bit of both sometimes, huh? But for example, if I'm not dealing with something properly inside and it keeps repeating and I'm trying very hard, there's a point where I just cannot anymore. You know, I just get tired of the whole thing. And that's where it gets a bit dicey, you know? And this is why Om Shanti always works.
So you're actually defining something you'd mentioned earlier, which is that we need to appreciate the efforts of others, and we also have to appreciate and bring appreciation to our own selves. So this is also mercy and compassion, you were saying, for our own selves. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more about it, beyond, or just say, together with just accepting these aspects which are still there because it's been 2,500 years.
But, well, one way I find it, I mean, again, I know everybody's different and everybody's not on the same, you know, level and things like that. Doesn't matter, you know. But when there's that real, you know, in any relationship, whether it's with God or with myself or with others, a very powerful element in that relationship to be effective is trust. You know? You know, when I trust the best in myself, when I trust that I, in my original state, I am pure, I will have that mercy and compassion because, you know, all those other things have accumulated. They have come. It's okay. And in that, you know, acknowledgement, whether we call it accepting or acknowledgement, then start to come the solutions. But I have to start from the positive point. You know, if I don't start from that positive point, no matter how much I analyze the weakness, no matter how many processes I go through, it just stays there. Because I haven't shifted my consciousness and I haven't seen it from another perspective. I'm too much in it. You know, I'm in it. And it just keeps going around and around. And I can understand very well why it's come, why it's there, why it keeps repeating. But it doesn't go away because I haven't properly connected with my original self. I can say I'm a soul, but I haven't connected to that fact. I haven't connected to the shanti, the peace, because the peace actually really stabilizes me. And I'm able to go very deep into an original harmony of self and an original non-violence. I am able to really go into that and a very deep feeling of completeness and contentment. This is what Om Shanti does. But we don't research it enough and therefore we don't go into that deep experience. We just say it's peace and that's it. But it has many aspects. And amongst the aspects is stability, contentment, the feeling of completeness. And that automatically creates a self-respect. Because we need to understand why does Baba keep saying it all the time, Om Shanti? Why all the daddies now keep saying it 3 times? They have nothing else to say? But there's deep reasons for it. And it's very healing energy. That then when it's released in the consciousness, I can deal with the other things from another perspective.
Even though we just had a traffic control, Anthony, I wonder if you could define for us some guidelines for being able to do this kind of deep research on Om Shanti. Supposing I want to have an experiment on Om Shanti for 1 month, what would be some of the guidelines to allow me to go deep with it?
I think one very big attention is not to be in a rush and not to be superficial and not to be ritualistic. Ritualistic is that we do it very technically and too much superficiality. We don't really sit and be attentive and use it. Like now, when the traffic control came, think about it. I won't ask. Think about for yourself, what did you really do? Yeah. Where did the mind really go? Think about it. You know, if you can be very honest, because if I can be very honest and see actually where does my mind really go when there are these traffic controls? Where does my mind really go when I hear Baba in the Muli will mention Om Shanti? Because again, it's not just the words in themselves. It's actually that thought which gets connected to my deepest reality.
Can you?
And what I was talking about before is that actually it is, you know, the stability, the feeling of completeness, the feeling of contentment.
Anthony, what did you do in that traffic control? Or what would you advise people who would like to do some very deep research on Om Shanti? What are they doing in a 5-minute?
Already.
Yes, you did, but I want
to be specific. No, you've got to pay attention. No, it's not specific. We mustn't get into unnecessary details. Take it as it is. Sometimes we overanalyze something, and we want something, it's already there. But we're don't have to squeeze. Just the main thing, what you asked what I did, I asked, where did my attention, where is it? When I could see my intention was going somewhere else. I said, you know, you don't go there. You know, you bring it, go back. That actually all it takes is, don't let the attention be distracted. And one has to do, like with any aspect of knowledge, if you want something new in yoga, you have to do some kind of real reflection beforehand. I don't sit in, when doing Om Shanti meditation, not I sit, you know, I'm stable now, what stability mean, not that time, it's done before. And because our intellects are lazy, they rush. A lazy intellect is always in a rush. A lazy intellect is always in a superficial mode. And this is then why there can be the feeling of routine and boredom. It's very simple. Stop. We tell others to do it. Good teachers, huh? But how do I stop? And I have to pay attention to how I stop. And, you know, less thoughts, less discussions, less words, and go back, you know, consciously direct my mind to go back into my original essence, especially during meditation, traffic control. But it doesn't happen a lot because the soul is very careless. You know, Daddy spoke about this in our meeting, that bad omens come because of carelessness. It's not that we don't know. It's not that maybe we have never practiced. We have practiced. We do know. Careless. And that's what makes the difference between souls. The difference that comes between souls is some remain attentive. And they add newness to their relationship with themselves and Baba through really making a research. They don't just study, they research. So they take that laziness and carelessness goes out of the intellect. And silence, more silence, because real attentiveness creates silence. And that silence creates subtlety. When we are subtle, then we are able to connect properly. And then there's that experience. And that experience anchors the soul within a very deep, deep self-respect. Experience anchors the soul in self-respect. It's not the workshops. There are many workshops, and often the people who are giving the workshops, they themselves get into their own self-disrespect within a week themselves. You know what I mean? We don't pay attention to learn ourselves.
See, I feel this is very exciting arena to explore, because recently I was sitting with Anthony while he was giving a lesson on how to meditate to some non-BKs. And the guidelines I've been working with ever since, and they've been very powerful for me. Can you share some of those lines?
No, I was in Delhi for 1 week, and I had to do with 8 companies. I went out to business people, you know, senior management, this management, that management, and this is not really my cup of tea, you know, going into corporate places. I mean, I had no idea, you know. They showed me all around the factory with the Honda my things, and, you know, this is the supply, this is the this, this is that, you know, we produce so many things. Yes, fine, good. But they are suffering from a lot of stress. They have to keep producing more and more to please, well, the customers and the director and all of that. And you know, they know about they shouldn't get stressed. They know what causes stress. There was no need to go into all of that again. I mean, a few things were repeated, and a few things about values and things like that. But what they needed is actual empowering. And so we did. They had been prepared by the sisters there. The sisters had done a very good job, so they knew about meditation. It's not like starting from scratch. They knew its benefit, but you know they couldn't do it. They would just say Om Shanti, like, you know, I would say Mickey Mouse or, you know, strawberry cake or something. You know, it's the same. They didn't really get into it. And this is what they were asking, you know. How can we actually, because we talked about activating the inner system, when all the outer systems are creating fear and stress, right? How to activate the inner system? And they said, you could see that, you know, he's telling them, stop, you know, do meditation for 5 minutes, but, I mean, this, or 10 minutes, it's too long. They said, it's too long. 5 minutes is too long. And it is, isn't it? For complete concentration, right? 5 minutes. It's a long time, isn't it? Even 1 minute. You know, we have just a minute, right? Just a minute, things. You know, you think of it, it's 60 seconds and 60 thoughts in just a minute. And can I really concentrate so deeply on a thought that that thought holds? Because you see, you only empower when a concentrated thought is held. If it's going all over the place, it will not empower. It may relax me, may relax, but it won't really recharge me. Of course, something is better than nothing, of course. So what we did was we decided to do 20 seconds meditation. I said, is there time for 20 seconds? They said, yes, there's time for 20 seconds.
Don't laugh. This is really good for us. Believe me.
It was 20 seconds. Said, but it has to be absolute concentration. You have to. The main thing is to be present. Don't think of anything else. Eh? And so, and then we gave we did a little bit of class on I am, the eternity of the self, the spiritual identity, the soul that has all the resources inside itself. And then, we did Shanti, peace. And then peace, we went through the different aspects, stabilizing, it anchors me, that foundation that is there, that blueprint of being that is there, how peace harmonizes, that peace is serenity, completeness. We went into it first. Because you need that, you see, why do you need understanding before you make the practice? Because then there's acceptance. For example, if I'm meditating, I think peace, and someone says completeness or stability, you think, how is that? Can it be? That breaks the meditation. You can't then. So it needs some kind of digging into it first, researching it deeply, the spiritual identity. And so I had to go into, what's the difference between spiritual identity, social identity, physical identity? And all three are valid, yeah? But what's the limit of the social identity? What does it do? What kind of values come with social identity? So this explanations had to be done so that they can understand the value of spiritual identity and to go deep into it. So that actually when we come to practice the 22nd, they've had that preparation in their consciousness, but they've had a faith in their practice. You see, you need a faith and acceptance in the practice, otherwise it won't be done properly. I think it's because what they thought until then, it was just a mantra. You know, being in India and it being, although it's a company, still they have this, the Indian way of, it's a mantra, but it's not a mantra. Actually, it's creating a thought that reaches into your blueprint, into your inner resources, and is able to release that original energy, which is very real. It's very subtle, though. So you can't see it, but you can feel it. Because they ask, should I see, should I this? I said, well, everyone has their way, but try to first understand and then feel. And this is how we did it. You know, they went, you know. So, and we did 1 second, one thought. As Baba has said, you know, just a second. So we started like that. So a second, a thought, and even a breath. Eh? So they started off, because I had to do it with them with the breath, you know, just, I relax. Yeah? And then again. The point was to repeat a few times. And not to have too many ideas. Because sometimes when we do creative meditation, you know, it's about 20 different directions in one creative meditation. Again, people may like it and feel relaxed, but they don't actually go deep inside themselves and in power. This is what happens. And so we did like that, you know, I relax, I'm peaceful. No, actually, we didn't say I'm peaceful. We said, I relax, you know. And with the breath, because they were all busy at work and everything, so I said, just relax. With a breath and with a thought, I relax. I'm quiet. I'm quiet. Not to rush on to the next thought, but to be, keep in that thought for a little while. And let that thought go deep into the consciousness. And we did Om. I am. I am. I am eternal energy. And then tell them to think of their breath, to relax. I am eternal energy. I am a spiritual being. Soul. Then Shanti. Shanti. Peace. Harmony. Complete. Content. Shanti. My foundation inside. I connect. I feel the serenity flow through all my being. Peace. Complete. Content. So we repeated these thoughts, but very slowly. And it's like a space in between these thoughts. So that, why? Because to let that thought seep very deeply inside. So that first lesson, we didn't do about God too much. Maybe next time. You can also, but at least to get that self, that consciousness of the self right, based on clear knowledge. It's not, you know, I'm traveling here and I'm going here, and it's very clear. But just deeper layers of understanding. And the thing is, when I was doing it with them, I felt facilitating. I was meditating with them. Not I was teaching them. Mm-mm. Not I was showing them. No. Okay, I was, but I felt also, when I said, I stabilize, I was doing it also. I'm content, feeling it also. So it's very important, especially when guiding others, not to teach them meditation, but to do it with them.
Anthony, another aspect of this, I'm calling it a kind of drill. Like something to do again and again and again, is what to do with other thoughts that come up. It was also very refreshing for me to hear you say something very basic, very simple, which is you just don't allow them. You don't dance with them or play with them and convert them or transform them, but there's that discipline of just saying, not now, I'm not going there, and keeping the focus on that one thought. I really experienced a huge amount of empowerment through this.
But again, in a way, it's not really, you need, sometimes you do need a discipline, but not really. You see, if I'm focusing on those thoughts very deeply, and I'm starting to experience it, other thoughts that come will be like an echo and they're trying to distract. But I just put my attention on that track that I've created. The problem is, if that track that I'm creating is not deep enough, it won't be experiential, it'll just be technical. And so, the other thoughts will come with power, and I will turn to them.
So how to deepen that track?
But this is what I'm saying, this is why you need to do the understanding first,
right.
And then you repeat slowly, you go from understanding, you go into, you see, you don't just keep saying, I'm stable, I'm content, I'm so, you've got to stop. There has to be silence in there. But in that silence, I'm concentrating and going more inward. That's why, and so we used to do this in 20 seconds. So they had to stop 7-8 times a day for 20 seconds, but no rush at all, and they had to be perfectly present. If they're not present, it won't work. And if other thoughts come, go back to the focus of those positive soul conscious thoughts that we were creating. Yeah, and this is an exercise they had to do, and it's good for us also.
That's what I'm saying. I've received a lot of benefit from it, a lot of attainment.
So we don't exercise. We think once we know it, we're already the emperors, you know, but actually I have to constantly be a student, which means I've got to exercise. It's like a language. You've got to constantly use it, otherwise it's forgotten.
Anthony, just looking at the time, I want to take it one step in a slightly different direction. Your relationship to Baba feels so sweet and natural. How do you approach Amritvela and your relationship to Baba?
Sweetly. Naturally.
And for those of us who have that naturalness or sweetness.
But the point, I mean, I don't think it's a difficult thing. The point is, it's very clear to me, time. It's the end of the cycle. Baba has come. God himself has come. I deeply believe that. That's why, you know, I'm here. So I welcome the meeting with him at the beginning of my day. You know, I'm very grateful for it. Well, where's the problem? You know, we become very, I mean,
ritualistic.
Not ritualistic, or ordinary. I find the biggest block is we take very beautiful things for granted.
Yes.
That's our biggest block. Maybe I was going to say sin, but maybe it's too strong a word. But, you know, very grateful. This morning I'm going to meet. And doesn't mean the meditation will always be, you know, powerful. No, it may not be. But I'm there. And I'm glad to be there. That's the time I want to spend. Whether it's powerful, not so powerful, whatever. I know Baba is there. And the gratefulness of that opportunity, for this opportunity. Respecting the time of God.
Speaking of the end of the cycle, here's another aspect. One gyan point that is really deep is drama. For sure the awareness of this is the drama. Should help also to create a pure atmosphere, if only to keep pure feelings for other actors. Sorry, it is a drama. So we keep pure feelings for other actors and we stay detached. But this point of drama seems to take a lot of time to really seep into the soul. After 30 years plus of gyani life, what is Anthony's experience of his progress in this respect? It kind of connects to the non-ordinariness of aspects of this knowledge. So what is your experience of this aspect in your own self-progress? In which ways do you know to deepen this point?
Of drama.
Yeah.
I'm very happy to be in it. in the beginning... You know, no one can play my part. Can anyone play my part? Can anyone play your part?
Was I playing my part before?
You always are. Yeah. You always are playing your part.
No, but I'm thinking, you know, the real part that I took this birth to play, until I had this gyan, until I had Baba, I couldn't, and that was a lot of the suffering.
Yeah, but that was the part also.
Yes.
You know, all things are fine, actually. And I remember when coming at the beginning of Gyan, and because the one thing I accepted everything else actually very easily, the drama repeats. I didn't like it at all. And you know, 84 births. I mean, what does it matter? 84, 82, 81, 80, 60. I just know I've had a lot. And but then, you know, as the intellect unblocks. And you feel the eternity. What actually is the eternity of your individuality? You, your uniqueness repeats for all eternity. The up and the down. Think about it. There's, you know, God is only one. That's why only God is one. He's not omnipresent. He's unique. But we don't go deep into appreciating the self or others or the drama, and you know, how many parts have I played, and where I've played them as a prince, I've played them as a devotee. You know, this is another thing that creates a very powerful, a pure atmosphere inside, is the drill that Baba gave us. You know, when we do this, we see our original purity, our deity purity, our human purity in its absolute, and then, you know, Baba said the bhakti form. How to remember how you are remembered? Which virtue is remembered? Very beautiful. And then how God Himself, the Master, is giving us the gift of original purity. That the drama. This is the drama. It happens all the every cycle, and playing this part, you know, of the angelic form. I mean, Daddy and Baba trying to facilitate our consciousness to get into that. It's like you have to kind of just step into it. How could you be bored? I mean, it's very nice.
Yeah, definitely. We could stop there, but there's one other question which kind of swings around.
Try to do all of them.
This is it. This is the last one. I do feel that we answered the two others, even though I didn't read them out loud. But okay. This last one swings around a bit to a little bit of what we were talking about in the beginning. If in a project the coordinator is not considering the feelings of everybody about the project, and that makes me lose my enthusiasm and my energy to contribute. So what should I be working on in myself to be able to maintain a good attitude anyway?
Talk. Communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Speak. Don't call lack of courage to speak tolerance, because it's not. Of course, not to be like a bulldozer either, and insist on my rights and my opinion. So, not to mix up and misunderstand the virtue of tolerance. And not to be bulldozer, you know, but to have the courage to communicate clearly. That will always keep me in. If I can do things non-violently but clearly, I find my enthusiasm stays, because I don't have a bad feeling for the soul, but, you know, I want to say. This is what I feel. See, everything is how you do it. It's not you don't do it, but it's how you do it. And what happens if I don't express and communicate my feelings, there's going to be a growing resentment. And that grows, resentment grows over time, and it's like a fossil. You ever seen a fossil? It's stuck there, it doesn't move. So, and that's the underlying current for actually bad feelings and non-communication and all of that. It's because I don't have the courage to speak non-violently. Because I may speak, but it may be too violent. Or I don't speak and I think I'm trying to keep the peace.
Or I speak to someone else.
If I'm speaking to someone else because I really want to understand how to handle it, that's fine.
Yes.
But if I'm speaking to someone else because I want a confirmation of my bad feelings for that soul, that's wrong, of course. It's not going to get me any. It's wrong because it doesn't get me anywhere.
It's really a lack of courage.
Yes. One has to speak, and if one can't handle it, then you speak to the right persons. And the right person means, one, it wouldn't necessarily take your side, but it shows you a bridge. But sometimes when we do speak, we just want a confirmation of bad feelings.
Mm.
Then this is a big sabotage.
Actually, this connects to one last question that I had, and I think we completed the others. You were saying that in terms of how things which wouldn't have been fully resolved inside will come up in Madhuban, because Madhuban is such a pure atmosphere, and that's good. We have a more powerful mirror within which to check our self-progress. But you were saying that if it comes up in Madhuban, you also have the seniors.
Mm.
So how do you use the seniors? It's a little bit about this communication thing that you're saying. Because I feel that sometimes it's we don't know when it's good to go to the seniors or not. Mm. Or how to talk about the thing when we're in front of a senior. So that we're not wasting their time, or we look like we're gossiping or being negative.
Well, look like gossiping or being negative. I mean, if I'm not, I'm not, you know. I just will speak, you know. I don't worry about that. I've got to check my own motives for speaking something. Is it to complain, or is it to find really a solution? You know, there's a big difference. And anyway, there are many classes, and, you know, if I'm, my mind is open enough and my heart is open enough, I mean, I can get things from classes. They always are very, very helpful. So it's not a matter of wasting a senior's time. But if something is very crucial, that I really want to understand something, to make something better, whether for myself, whether for service, whether for something, it's fine. They're very open. Just that they will not take, usually I find that they don't take lots of time because they have things to do.
But I think you've put it nicely. There is certain criteria. You have to really just be interested in a solution, not all these other things. And I think that's the same for writing a letter. A lot of souls seem to hesitate to write that letter because in the writing they see that there's so many strong feelings that come up, and the desire and interest in just finding a solution kind of gets obscured. And when seniors get letters like that, they aren't really interested or happy to respond.
But you know, when you condemn somebody else, even a senior, they'll have mercy for you. Not so much blame the person you're condemning. They could be like that, they could not be like that. But if I've got into that passion of bad feeling, they'll try to help me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. Thank you, Anthony.
You.
I always see it's a pleasure box, which we just get to open.
Thank you
very much. Thank you so much.
Om Shanti.
Last few minutes of silence.
So, see where the mind goes in the silence, eh?
It's a wonderful practice.